Good morning. On today's programme, Christmas in the shadow of Russia's war on Ukraine and why human rights groups are concerned at the failure to hold the Nigerian army to account for a series of accidental attacks on local people. But first we go to Bangladesh, where parliamentary elections are underway and Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina's victory is as good as guaranteed because the principal opposition party is boycotting the polls. India-backed Hasina is all set to rule Bangladesh for a fifth term, despite being called a dictator by her critics at home and abroad. Sajida Momin has more.
Bangladesh is voting today, but there is not even a hint of suspense over the outcome of the parliamentary polls. The re-election of Sheikh Hasina, the world's longest-serving woman prime minister, is a dead certainty. She is seeking a mind-boggling fifth term in office, and her success is assured. Hasina first ruled over the densely populated Muslim country from 1996 to 2001. 2009 onwards, she has been the prime minister for three straight terms, underlining 76-year-old Hasina's and her Awami League party's stranglehold on Bangladesh. Her victory in today's general elections is a foregone conclusion, not because of her popularity in Bangladesh, but because the principal opposition, Bangladesh Nationalist Party, is boycotting the polls. Moreover, Hasina has co-opted the entire administrative machinery, including the army, paramilitary, and even the judiciary and election commission, not to speak of tens of thousands of party cadre to ensure her re-election. The opposition is saying, without mincing its words, that today's elections are neither free nor fair. Opposition leaders are openly accusing Hasina of perpetuating a massive fraud to retain power by any means. The international media, too, has labelled it a farce and a sham and a staged drama. But the media in Dhaka, capital of Bangladesh, is more circumspect and chooses its words very carefully. It is playing safe and meekly calling the elections a selection or a festival of votes. The press doesn't dare to take liberties or even exercise its legitimate right to comment or criticize, because Hasina has throttled her country's print and electronic media by arresting journalists and editors who question her. Global watchdogs like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch believe that ruthlessly authoritarian Hasina's record-breaking grip on power has totally destroyed democracy and turned the conservative Islamic nation into a single-party, single-leader dictatorship. Hasina is the daughter of Bangladesh's founder, Sheikh Mujibur Rahman, who was assassinated within a few years of the country's birth in 1971. This year, Bangladesh is the first country in South Asia to head to the polls. After Bangladesh, elections will be held in another four: India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and Bhutan. But nowhere is the outcome as guaranteed as in the case of Bangladesh, though India's Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, is also most likely to get re-elected for a third term later this year. Hasina is the longest-serving head of state in South Asia. Importantly, Hasina and Modi are on excellent terms, and their interdependence is shaping geopolitics in this part of the world. And as India, a nuclear-armed military-come-economic power, is the regional big brother, its backing is crucial for Hasina. New Delhi's unqualified support, of course in its own national interest, is a huge factor in Hasina's favour. And if truth be told, the biggest priority of India's foreign policy come security establishment in recent months has been to ensure its loyal ally Hasina's re-election at any cost. The opposition BNP is sitting out the vote because Hasina rejected its persistent calls to step down and install a neutral caretaker government to conduct the elections. The constitution had provisions for an interim non-partisan administration to ensure free and fair parliamentary polls, but Hasina scrapped it after coming to power in 2009 to perpetuate her rule with the help of the state machinery. In 2018, Hasina's Awami League bagged 95% of seats, flagging what critics at home and international observers called out as evidence of outright rigging. Hasina routinely dismisses all allegations and attributes her successive election victories to the undying love of her countrymen, which she claims to have inherited from her father. The BNP is abstaining, but on paper at least, 29 out of 44 registered political parties are in the poll fray for 300 parliamentary constituencies. To make the elections appear inclusive, the Awami League has fielded dummy candidates as independents against party nominees in many seats. Moreover, there are candidates from friendly parties to create an impression of electoral contests when there are really none. The Awami League has also tried to ensure a big turnout by threatening to cancel the welfare benefits of those who don't go to the polling booths. Despite all this, today's election is destined to be remembered as a farce for the next 5 years. For World Report, I am Sajida Momin in India.
Next, we go to Ukraine, whose citizens have been living under constant threat since Russia invaded the country almost 2 years ago. This year was the first time that the Orthodox Church of Ukraine celebrated Christmas on December 25th, instead of the usual January the 7th. But as Sally Hayden reports, the festivities seemed a little strange against the backdrop of an ongoing conflict.
It was the night before Christmas, and I was at a Vogue battle in Kyiv, Ukraine. For the uninitiated, a Vogue battle is a competition which sees two people at a time face off in segments that include dance, fashion, and striking poses. A disco ball spun above us as an MC urged on contestants who were dressed in sequins, feathers, and leather or lingerie. They twisted and contorted as the judges deliberated and the crowd roared. This event, like many taking place across Kyiv, was partially a fundraiser for the Ukrainian military. I had been invited by Maxim Potapovich, a communications manager with the organization Ukraine LGBTIQ Militaries for Equal Rights. We had spent an hour earlier that week in a bustling coffee shop and bar talking about love and relationships and how they had been impacted by the devastating war. In particular, he told me, the conflict has propelled a call among some for equal rights for LGBTIQ couples in a country where same-sex marriage is not allowed. That means that the partners of those who die fighting lack the right to be informed about their loved one's fate and everything that comes alongside that. The bar we were in served Kyiv mules, a Ukrainian alternative to the Moscow mule. In other bars and coffee shops, I saw F-16 and brother-in-arms cocktails, and I purchased a patriotic cappuccino, the milk dyed blue with anchin, and Ukraine's trident symbol marked on top with yellow spice. The Vogue battle event ended early on Christmas Eve. Everyone had to be home for the midnight curfew. The curfew meant the usual midnight masses had to be rescheduled too. This year was the first that the Orthodox Church of Ukraine celebrated Christmas on December 25th instead of January 7th. And a lot of people I spoke to were finding it a bit strange. But they were supportive of anything that signified a greater break from Moscow. The full-scale invasion of Ukraine, which began in February 2022, is approaching its two-year anniversary. The front lines have become largely static. The death toll is enormous. By mid-December, US sources said there could have been 315,000 dead or injured Russian troops. The number of dead and injured soldiers on the Ukrainian side is a guarded secret, though many people told me they believe it could be similar. In a hospital in Lviv, western Ukraine, I saw schoolchildren perform a nativity play for injured military men. Unbroken Rehabilitation Center is now home to dozens of soldiers who lost limbs while fighting. We watched as one man was given a new prosthetic leg and tried to walk for the first time. It would be a long road to recovery, staff here told me. Despite constant news updates, giving increasingly despondent messages about the state of international support for Ukraine, the war could feel far away in Kyiv. That feeling was regularly dashed, though, by the air raid sirens. Christmas morning was far from the only time silence was disturbed by one. At this point, many people ignore the alerts, while others move away from windows and behind two walls in my case, to the whole of the apartment I was staying in. Locals check telegram channels to hear what exactly the threat is this time. Is it a ballistic or hypersonic missile? What I thought was a car revving one night turned out to be a drone. The sound of explosions can be a good sign. It means the air defense is working. Air raid warnings can last hours, the ending marked by an app most people have downloaded on their phones. The voice of Mark Hamill, who is known for his role as Luke Skywalker in Star Wars, is heard then saying, "May the Force be with you." Several times, as I walked around the snowy capital of Ukraine, I passed a Christmas tree made of spent ammunition which had been collected at the front lines. Beside it was a QR code, which linked to a site taking donations for military drones. There was also text. It read, "Live, work, celebrate. But remember reality. This Christmas tree is our window into reality. The war in Ukraine continues, and it should become the business of the whole society." For World Report, this is Sally Hayden in Ukraine.
Finally, we go to Nigeria, and the human rights group Amnesty International has expressed serious concerns about the failure to hold the Nigerian army to account for a series of deadly accidental attacks on local people. The latest in early December resulted in over 100 civilians being killed and many more injured when a drone dropped bombs on a religious celebration. From Nigeria, Polum David reports.
Usually, when Nigerians hear the news of a bomb blast, it is believed that terrorists are the perpetrators. However, on the evening of Sunday, 3rd December, while a Muslim religious celebration, Maulud, was ongoing in the Tudumbiri community, Igabi local government area, northwestern Kaduna State, there was an airstrike. The blast killed over 100 innocent civilians, with many others injured. The big news is that the Nigerian army has claimed responsibility for this sad tragedy. Eyewitnesses say while the celebration was in progress around 9:45 to 9:50 p.m., the first bomb dropped from a Nigerian army drone, killing about 56 people, most of them women and children. It was a harrowing and chaotic sight, especially when survivors began calling family members of victims from nearby villages to come to the scene, identifying and carrying dead bodies and helping those injured. Shortly after, around 11 p.m., a second bomb dropped from the same military drone, killing many responders from nearby villages. One survivor said he lost his wife and five children. Another said he lost 14 family members. The victims were buried in two mass graves on Monday, 4th December. Survivors called on the government to investigate the incident to prevent further occurrences. Kaduna, a state where these sad events occurred, is among several states that bandits and terrorists attack, steal, kill, and kidnap for ransom. Army officials described the incidents as a routine mission against terrorists, which, in quotes, inadvertently affected members of the community. Kaduna State Governor Uba Sani said they were, in quotes, mistakenly killed by a military drone targeting terrorists and bandits. Army Chief Lieutenant General Tarid Lagbaja has apologized to the residents and paid a condolence visit to the village. He regretted the unfortunate bombing, describing it as a very disheartening occurrence. General Lagbaja said the troops were carrying out aerial patrols when they observed a group of people and, in quotes, wrongly analyzed and misinterpreted their pattern of activities to be similar to that of bandits before the drone struck. President Tinubu has asked for a thorough and full-fledged investigation into the incident and called for calm while the authorities look diligently into the mishap. Members of the Northern Caucus of the legislature have vowed to ensure that victims and survivors of the Kaduna drone strikes receive appropriate compensation once the investigation report is released. Governors of Northern Nigeria have also donated 180 million naira to the victims of the drone accidents. Since 2017, over 300 people are reported to have been killed by airstrikes that security forces claimed were intended for bandits and terrorists that mistakenly hit local populations. According to Human Rights Watch, Nigerian authorities are required under international humanitarian law, which governs the use of force in armed conflicts, to take all feasible precautions to minimize harm to civilians and civilian objects, deliberate or indiscriminate attacks on civilians, including attacks in which there is no military target, are prohibited. Director of Amnesty International Nigeria, Issa Sanusi, said the military's recklessness is a result of the authorities' consistent failure to hold them to account for a long list of such atrocities. He added that these unlawful killings of civilians cannot be swept under the carpet. For World Report in Abuja, Nigeria, this is Polum David.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. But until then, for myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.